That's good. Now, you're kind of touching on something that is the next question on my list here. Question that I asked last week, and I'll give you guys all a chance to jump at this one. Is there a typical COS member?
No.
Yes.
All right, so we get two no's, two yeses. You're the deciding vote?
I would say yes.
All right, pretty good. That proves it. Tell me why you'd say no or yes.
Please.
Okay. Karen, I think, said no.
I said no, and I, honestly, what I think is there are probably maybe two or three types, typical types. And I noticed this, and I guess I'm part of this group, is the people who have come from Anglican or Catholic or Lutheran traditions and are coming for the liturgy. And the second group, I think, maybe people who have come out of Reformed traditions that felt maybe dead or stifling, and I can't speak too much about that, but that's a sort of vague sense. And maybe a third group of people who have come from completely different traditions or no worship traditions. And maybe each of those three groups have their own parts of our worship and our culture that appeal to them.
All right, a couple of yeses here.
I think in terms of more socioeconomic, it strikes me as very fairly wealthy, but in the don't drive SUVs, but there's no cars with rust in the parking lot.
Should I write that with hyphens?
You know what I mean there. It's very, very professional. You don't run into a lot of tradesmen. Like Mike, other churches we've been at, a lot of tradesmen, tradespeople.
I think there are two or three of us here.
Yeah, you know, if you wanted to have someone...
The tradespeople guild.
If you want to have someone from the church work on something at the church, there's no one. No, I think probably that's what they wanted to do.
Joel and Cindy?
Well, more like, I mentioned yes, because personality types, I would say. Karen said something about background types. Personality types, you know, the tend to be more introspective, more introspective. You know, when we sing songs that are celebrated, you don't find many of them really clapping or swing or dancing like my wife does many times. And if I may go ahead of myself or agenda speaking to what Mike said, the Reform, well, specifically the CRC, Reformed tradition, tends to be, and I mean this in the best sense, celebrating. in the best sense, and I don't mean to be anti-intellectual either, but if I speak from, let's say, an Asian tradition, and I'm not your typical Asian, I would say I'm the urbanized, educated, so untypical Asian, probably more Americanized and Europeanized than I am Filipinized. I say this because much of Asian culture, if you listen to Asian traditional music, capitalize a lot on repetition. And I've heard many of my colleagues in the music department say something about, particularly our chair who did this whole study on praise music, that there is some music that tends to be very repetitive and sometimes becomes so repulsive to many white Americans. But to Asians, Latinas, Latino races, there is a way that the repetition spirals deep into their soul. It really physicalizes itself. Even to the African American cultures, the repetition is a way of sometimes really almost an altered state of consciousness. And it connects them with the spiritual realm. It's very difficult for the white American to understand this, because especially for the CRC, because we look at our hymns and each line is different. Each line has a very rich theological concept, richly theological concepts, confessionals, confessions that we express. But for many of us, and this is part of me, I sort of look, my wife especially, looks at some way where she can get into the into her inner spirit and just focus on one central truth, for example, just God forgives me, God forgives me.
I love Tezei worship for that precise reason, but I'm also one of those people who's repulsed by the saying, Jesus is nice, Jesus is nice, Jesus is nice, Jesus is nice, God. And so I'm not sure what that says to me. I was thinking this morning, I'm looking forward to getting to the prayer labyrinth at our camp, because when my brain can't pray, my body can walk me into a state of heart that allows me to do that. And so I value that repetition, but I wonder, I mean, I think you're right. It's an acculturation thing.
And, you know, just valuing our differences. Yeah. We just have differences. Yeah. But at the same time, do we give space for these differences in our worship?
Yeah.
I'm really going ahead of myself.
It's a conversation. Feel free.
Let the others speak.
I'll say, in that first church, it's really the first church I went to as a Christian, was this small CRC church in Anchorage. And these were people who loved those hymns. And I think what you get with the hymns is they become like that over a span of years. And the singing at that church was nothing like we have ever experienced since. It wasn't like that in the praise and worship church we went to. NCOS doesn't hold a candle to the singing. These are people that had those hymns went through their bodies, and they were singing those hymns from the depths of their souls. And it's something when I went to the praise and worship church, people could enter that into more quickly because you had these praise songs that kind of gave a very immediate accessibility to that, to what this group had through those hymns, through more of a deeper experience of them. So,
see, this is interesting. I'll just jump ahead to some, you know, different areas. When you were talking about the rhythms, I was kind of laughing because I remember early on when I came to COS, I did Siahaba one time, and we ran out of music for communion. And so I just kept it going. And in that tradition, in the, you know, African tradition, you know, you're just getting started about 8 repetitions, you know. And I could tell when we went back to the beginning, everybody went, oh, okay, he's going back for the first time. And they were fine with that. And then they're like, he's going through it a second time. Oh my goodness, he's making up verses. This is unprecedented. And there was this real uncomfortability. And what's interesting is that there's a simultaneously a desire for, you know, just for lack of a better word, multiculturalism, you know, other cultures, those kinds of things. But an uncomfortability with the techniques of those cultures, like repetition, you know. And it's always been this thing that I'm thinking about. Half the questions that I have here, my little note said, questions for which I have no answer. It's because of things that I'm struggling with. How do we broaden into areas like the repetition of Asian or African music, the exuberance of praise and worship? How do we do that and still remain consistent with our tradition? Is it possible to do that?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. 2 weeks ago, I think there was this African lady who led the singing. And I don't know if you noticed, but I'm very much tied to the score. And the rhythm that she was doing was not into the score. So, and I sensed everybody in church just put the score away and sensed it. It was very instinctive, and I liked what we did. In fact, it was I think, the appropriate way to respond to her almost instinctive way of singing. She did a lot of repetitions and some embellishments on the side in her voice. Wonderful. That would be one particular way we could accommodate.
Which was an interesting, the background of that particular song is that Matilda and Josephine and Ami had taught me that song, and I wrote it down and kind of dutifully put it on paper the best I could. And then when she came into the choir, she's like, no, that's all wrong. And so the bulletin was already printed, and so we just kind of said, all right, well, we'll just not look at our music, and we'll just follow you. And it was a real, you could see, it was a real stretching kind of thing for the choir. You know, many of them were like, well, we're in a different key, we're not, I mean, we're kind of singing the song that we have here. But it was a very, you know, kind of uncomfortable thing in many ways. Karen, you
have. Well, I was going to say, I think sometimes it might help just to talk about it. I like when you write worship notes, and I don't. You wouldn't want to do this in a heavy-handed way, but I wonder if it's okay sometimes in the middle of worship to say, the next one we're going to sing is really from an oral tradition. And at camp, we never put anything on paper because paper is used to start fires. I give the staff a staff manual that I believe they will read, and they use it to start fires. So the songs we sing are all songs that we can teach by rote, and if you're going to have 65 verses, they better be really, really simple. And so it's much easier. I mean, I was thinking about that. Siahamba, we make up verses at camp all summer for Siahamba and everything else, Earth and All Stars. and nobody minds it because there isn't anything that you have to put down. And yet, you know, I want the liturgy in writing, but maybe so maybe sometimes we need to introduce a song by saying let's put down the paper and feel this one.
How do the rest of you feel about that, Mike? Especially the idea of getting off the page a little bit more, is that appealing?
Mm-hmm. I have no opinion about that.
Okay.
I never got to answer the diversity question. Part of the reason why I said no is we asked our kids, you know, when you get older and you can leave, will you stay at COS? And one said, no, definitely not. And one said, I think so. And the other one said, I don't know. So with my three kids, I have three different responses. And you know, I think we're all at different spots in our spiritual walk, and we all need different things. And I just want to say that, you know, we all need to be fed, and we all are fed different ways. But you know, our kids are kind of stuck with us. We can decide to leave if we want to, but our kids are kind of along for the ride right now.
Yeah. How about the rest of you that have kids, what's the word on the street in Kidville?
Well, I just wanted to say about music, this is another way that I feel like we don't fit in here, is some of us just aren't that analytical about music and worship, really. We don't go home and discuss it. I mean, the kind of things you're talking about are wonderful, but I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I just sing. I can hardly read music. I enjoy it, but that's it. So, but it just seems like there's a predominance of very high-level musicians here, and, you know, we're not all that way. But about the children, I have a teenager who thinks it's very dull here. She really does. It's a struggle. And our sixth grader doesn't say much.
With your kids, what do you think this is something that I think about a lot. In fact, I had a really funny time talking with the junior high boys one day about worship. It made me kind of nervous about my own boys becoming teenagers. I mean, we'd get about halfway through a sentence, and then they, you know, okay, Chinese fire drill, you know, or whatever. And it was very, very eye-opening. And I guess the question that I had is, what do you do? I think we all know that there's a certain phase that you go through, you know, and I think specifically junior high and high school, where what your peers are doing is very, very important. And, you know, parents will never be cool enough. And as a parent, well, how do you respond to that? You know, how do you become more cool, you know? And so that's the kind of question I have is do we try to change what the church is doing, or do we kind of wait it out and say, like a parent really has to do, you know, or we're just going to wait for the next 5 years, we're going to be the dumbest, least cool thing on the planet, and eventually they'll come back.
I appreciate it.
So, and that's something I just keep thinking about.
I think it's very unfortunate that the church as a whole has sort of entered into the American marketing methods. And I think that's affected the church in that there's an idea now that the church has to be specifically marketed to not only to broad demographic groups, but then also has to be parsed within the church. Like, you need to do this for this group, you need to do for this for the 20-somethings, you need to do this for 30-somethings, you need to do this. I think that's extremely unfortunate. That was a terrible thing at the Praise and Worship Church we went to. It was always, they had purple chairs like this. And a lot of the discussions, I'll say most of the discussions, well, what about the people in the purple chairs? What are they thinking? It's like, it's not always about that. Mm-hmm. You know, worship is about worshiping God. It's not about you. And so, in general, I think that's perhaps inevitable in our culture because of how we're marketed to in so many other ways, but I think it's a very dangerous path for the church to be going down. I'd love to see the church hold its ground, even though it makes people unhappy, perhaps. I don't know. I think in the long run, you're going to have a stronger church if you don't market it to all your members and to all the people out there at large.
Okay, so as long as the church stands in the truth of the gospel, mm-hmm. that's the number one thing. You talk about marketing. Well, the teenagers, you know, we're not trying to market the church to the teenagers. They're here, and they need to be fed.
Those are two separate issues, really, too. How do we attract new people is a marketing issue, and how do we feed? And I appreciate that word. You know, for me, one of the answers to that is blended worship, that there might be a song or a hymn or two that I'll pass on, you know, or I'll listen quietly and hope it's over, and some that I really look forward to. In the communion circle today, there are a couple of kids dancing, and wow, you know, and I mean, and this was probably a little bit unusual in terms of the music, but you see, that's it. Just like a buffet dinner, you might not take every dish, but mm-hmm. you'll be fed by the end. And so I hope we can find ways to have teenagers say, well, boy, there was that one song I really liked, right. Or that one part of worship.
Throw them a bone or two.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
I have a probably much more different laissez-faire attitude towards. No church, I think, can possibly hope to appeal to all mm-hmm. Demographic types. And I value the fact that each of my children might want to be in another Christian church. The very comfort for me is that they are part of the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot hope to attract them to COS because, and my wife knows this, COS is basically Joel Navarro's as the father, being the strong person in the family. This is going to be my church. Everybody else has to follow. And I don't mean to voice that on all of my children. So Jerome feels much more comfortable with the Hanin CRC, which is way out in Wyoming, but it's way too far, so he just sort of tags along with us here. The idea of, you know, his issues about space, being valued as, you know, a foreigner in a predominantly white church. So those are the issues that he's struggling with the Korean church in Hanin CRC. He feels much more at home there.
See, it's an interesting question to me because, so for instance, if we were in an Orthodox church, we wouldn't have